Lecture 46, Catholic Reforms and Confessionalization.
Welcome back once again to our series of lectures on the foundations of Western civilization. This time, lecture number 46, we're going to continue our discussion of the religious history of the 16th century in Europe, the period that we have called the Reformation or the Reformations. Now, in our last lecture, we left off at the end with a question. What was the Catholic Church doing while the magisterial reformers were offering their teachings and offering their particular forms of ecclesiastical organization to the European world? And we'll turn to that question, and then we'll also turn, at the end of this lecture, to a sort of a general panoramic view of the religious situation in Europe in the last decades of the 16th century. Now, I hope by now it's become clear that from one point of view, the older polemical tradition to which I referred at the very beginning, not of the last lecture, but of the one before that, namely the view that the 16th century was somehow a sports field on which there were Catholics over here and Protestants over there, is a terribly superficial and inadequate view. Not least because there were indeed, as we've seen, a variety of different forms of Protestantism. Now in this lecture, we're also going to notice that there were a variety of forms of Catholicism as well. But there's another problem with the older polemical view, as I called it, the Catholic versus Protestant view, and that is that there was long a tendency to talk about the religious history of the 16th century as if one had a Reformation and a Counter-Reformation. First you have the Protestant reformers, then the Catholics responded to them. Well, in fact, that view warps our perspective badly. It simply bends it out of all recognizable shape. We might notice, for instance, the Catholic Church began a very wide-ranging program of reform before the magisterial reformers had begun their work, or even as the early magisterial reformers were setting to work. That's part of the reason that over the last two or three lectures, I've asked you to remark closely the dates of people's lives so that we can see in what generation they fit and who was contemporary with whom and when these people were working at the same time. And then, indeed, Catholic and Protestant reforms both drew on humanist scholarship. So not only were these people working at the same time, they were often working on many of the same questions. They were inspired by many of the same intellectual issues. They were encouraged to work by the same kinds of new intellectual methods, close textual study, study of languages, and so on. We also have noticed that there was a very widespread tradition of critique of the late medieval church. None of the Protestants was really any tougher, I suppose we might say, than someone like Erasmus had been. And yet, of course, some stayed on the Catholic side of the line, whereas others eventually crossed the line into one or another forms of the Protestant or the Reformed tradition. Now, there was a Counter-Reformation. But the Counter-Reformation was a relatively limited project, as we'll see as we go along here, and its heyday really fell in the period from about 1550 to 1650. So what we want to do for the next few minutes here is build our way back to about the year 1550. Again, nothing sacred about that year. It's notional. We have built our way to that year with Luther and Zwingli and Calvin. So now we want to kind of go back and build our way to that year, asking questions about what was going on in Roman Catholic Europe during this same period of time. Then we'll have something to say about the period after 1550 in our concluding remarks to this lecture. All right. Now, we have encountered the humanist element in the Catholic reforms in Desiderius Erasmus and Thomas More. Another very good example, who brings out a number of the elements, the dimensions of this age, is the Spanish cardinal, Francisco Cardinal Jiménez de Cisneros. Born in 1436, he died in 1517.